All right.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back
to the Flick Chicks podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison.
And how are you, Allison?
Oh, I'm okay. I'm pretty sunburnt. Pretty bad. It's been rough, I'm not going to lie.
Summertime when the weather is hot.
And your skin is white. And you get so sunburnt. It's really bad. But, oh well. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, it's a little hot for me, but
it's pretty hot.
Other than that, it's like 101 degrees today.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Well, we're releasing this episode a little late, because we're both working full time. It's hard.
It's tough. It's tough.
So
tough to find time, so we had to watch the movie, obviously, and
then record this. So the schedule might be a little less on time now. Who knows? We got to figure out. We also both started jobs basically like almost the same week. Uh-huh. So we're both kind of adjusting to the new schedules at once, which makes it hard too.
Definitely.
And we're not always on similar schedules, so.
Yeah, it's a little tough sometimes.
It's a little tough.
But and you don't get home till late.
Yeah, which is horrible. But soon.
Soon, yes.
Soon. But anyway, have you guys seen the news lately?
So our movies that we're gonna do for the next couple of episodes,
At least,
are going to have to do with what's going on in the news.
What's going on? You guys heard about it? It's not good.
It's not
so
good.
Chill. Yeah, so you guys probably know,
police
brutality.
Police are trying to stop police brutality with more police brutality.
As per usual, they're like, oh, how do we stop police brutality? I know. Let's beat people up.
Let's beat all these citizens
up. Let's beat citizens up until they stop talking about it. That fixes the problem. So, yeah, so George Floyd was killed by a police officer and basically assisted by, in his killing, by three other police officers.
Yep.
And so there were a lot of protests, which I think have happened for many reasons. I mean, I think George Floyd's death is literally the epitome of police brutality.
Yeah.
Which it just embodies everything that's wrong with the policing state, literally in one murder.
Definitely.
Well, I mean, you have a cop, the cop that actually murdered him, right? The cop that was
kneeled
on his neck. That cop killed a black man in 2008.
Jesus.
Killed a black man in 2008, but was not convicted for it, did not get in trouble for it at all, wasn't even reassigned to anywhere, okay? No problem at all. But has had 19 other accounts of police brutality reported against him.
That would never happen in any other job.
What do you do, like, Dairy Queen? 19 counts of shitting in the ice cream machine.
Yeah.
It's like, you wouldn't work there anymore, buddy.
Yeah, if you had 19 counts of shitting in the ice cream machine, and then you shat in the ice cream machine.
You get one count of shitting in the ice cream machine, you're out. That's for sure.
Listen, I'm very upset about this. So, I, as someone who studies psychology and is going to be a therapist,
mm-hmm,
right,
mm-hmm,
I have to go to school for at least 6 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Police officers go to school for 6 months.
Literally. Literally. Someone said, like, you know, I have a GED, and that's respectable, but police officers are only allowed to have GEDs. We don't want that high school diploma, baby. We want you here.
The less educated, the better.
Too violent for Vietnam. We'll accept you.
We'll accept you.
Literally so bad. And then also, you have the three other officers who were initially not charged with anything.
Which is just like you said, the epitome of the problem with the police. There's this conspiracy of silence.
It's like, even though those other police officers totally saw that that man was not doing well.
I mean, I don't understand how you can watch someone kneel on someone's neck for 9 minutes.
And not say a word.
No, just say, this is fine.
Not only not say a word, but actively help him kneel on him. And, you know,
it's disgusting.
And, like, so obviously this is, everyone's already on edge because COVID has been handled so poorly. And also everyone has, it's not working. So now people have time to, like, do these things that they want to do and they've always wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And then this happens. And so there's a lot of protests. There are a lot of riots. Although while I'm not necessarily against rioting and it's, like,
It's ideal.
And it's ideal. I don't really care about that. I do care that, like, it feels like a lot of these riots aren't being started by Black Lives Matter protesters.
They're being started by white people
who have, like, a weird desire to burn things, and so they're using, like, the chaos of the Black Lives Matter movement right now to, like, take advantage of that.
They're also white supremacists, like, doing blame it on POC.
Yeah, yeah. And, this is something that's really interesting that I was told once. So back in, like, 2016, I think it was, the University of Mizzou, mm-hmm. I believe, in Columbia. Is that Columbia?
Yeah, University of Missouri.
Okay, University of Missouri, Mizzou, in Columbia, had this law, this big, like, internet scandal thing because there were these white supremacists on their campus that were driving around and, like, trying to hurt black people, basically, their black students.
Yeah.
And there was this big Twitter thing because black people were posting and being like, truck with this license plate is out there, like, keep a watch out, and it went really viral. Well, I have a friend who goes to Mizzou, and he said that they found out later that this was actually not real. Okay? So what it was is there were a bunch of white supremacists who went to the campus, and they were all in like a 4chan group on Reddit.
Wow, and that couldn't be explained any better.
So then they came up with this, because Mizzou is, like, one of the most diverse campuses in Missouri.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not saying much, but
it's one of the best.
It's one of the best. And so they came up with this idea that they were going to basically make fake Twitter accounts where they were going to pretend to be black people who went to Mizzou, and they were going to start these rumors that there was, like, a huge problem with racism on Mizzou's campus so that black people wouldn't want to go there because they felt unsafe. And then they would, like, put the license plates of, like, their own cars in the, like, they would, like, take pictures of their own cars or of other students who were not involved in it at all, cars, and post their license plates and be like, this car's driving around, so that people, black people on the campus, would actually see that car.
Yeah.
Because it was a real car that was really on the campus, mm-hmm. but it wasn't, like, they were just doing it to scare people, basically, and that the reason Mizzou never came out, like, well, for one, they found out, by the time they found out, like, the scandal was kind of, like, out of the news.
Yeah.
But the reason they never, like, came back and said anything about it is because they were afraid there would be a lot of backlash on the school for, like, having white supremacists on the campus at all who were able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And like, in the end, it didn't really make much of a difference if black people didn't want to go there because, like, there are apparently white supremacists on the school who don't want you here.
Yeah.
And it's just stuff like this. Like, this idea that, like, white supremacists would come out and begin riots in order for the flak to fall back on the BLM protesters is not that crazy of an idea.
No.
That thing I just said is a crazy idea, and it happened.
Yes.
Like,
it's almost like white supremacy is, you know, homegrown terror?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know. I'm just throwing things out.
I'm just throwing things out. It's almost like that, isn't it? Yeah, it's definitely insane. It's definitely insane. And then also, like, this COVID thing has happened and people have more time. They're upset by the COVID. They're upset by this. And it's like, that's why these riots are not stopping and the looting is not stopping. But I think it's good.
I think it's good. I support all that, personally.
Yes. Yeah. And so,
listen, I think that looting and rioting are valid forms of protest that, you know, draw into question a society, you know, putting more value on material goods than human life, which,
I mean,
obviously,
we do. I agree. And I think, like, it's amazed me, like, so many politicians and actors and like, public figures have stepped out and, like, you know, been like, yes, this is fine. Even business owners whose stores have been looted have said, like, we don't care. Like, this is a bigger issue. But, like, it's amazing to me how many politicians have just, like, not talked on it at all. Like, just acting like it's not happening. And you're like, these are, like, these are such large, widespread riots in tons of countries. Every single state has had one. There have been huge riots. Even, like, we live in, like, Joplin. And the protest that happened this weekend had over 100 people there.
Yeah.
Which is a lot for Joplin.
Yeah. It's one of the most widespread civil rights movements
in a long time. And in Springfield, I saw a drone shot of this, like, bridge that was completely just covered with people. And it's like, we live in a place that's 88% white.
Yeah.
And that's not, that's just like the rest of those, the rest of that number, the 22% or whatever, is all POC, mm-hmm. not black people. I don't even know. Black people are probably in the minority of POCs over here because yeah. we have a lot of like, a lot of Hispanic and like Asian cultures. Yeah. And I don't know, I guess because we're like in the middle.
Yeah.
But it's really bizarre. It's just so bizarre.
What a time to be alive.
Truly, what a time to be alive. So, a lot of places have been doing more work to share more, like, black stories and more content from black artists and support black businesses and stuff like that. So, for the foreseeable future, mm-hmm. we will be covering only black, either we like either black written or black directed
yeah.
stories.
Yeah, yeah.
So we won't be covering like if it's a black movie by a white person.
Yeah, that's that. We've Coffee and Kareem.
Yeah, Coffee and Kareem. if you haven't seen it, don't bother.
Don't bother. but obviously, we are both two white women.
Yeah, pretty. Yes, very white.
Very white. Blonde. So, we're going to try our best. And yes. please, we want feedback.
Yeah, if we say something that is
incorrect.
Incorrect or wrong or offensive, like, we are open to listening to it. We're not going to get, like, upset.
No, we want to, like, we always want to learn.
Yes. So, we thought we'd start with one of the best black directors that we know of.
The best. One of my favorite directors.
Spike Lee.
Yep.
So he's done quite a few films. Several of them do have, not all of them, but several of them do, he focuses on race in America a lot. Yeah. And we really, really wanted to do the Right Thing, which is about the LA race riots.
Mm-hmm.
But we could not find a copy. The only okay. copy.
Okay, so we went to Family Video. Because to rent on Amazon, it's like $15.
And yeah, we were like, okay, let's just rent it somewhere else.
We'll just try to find it at Family Video. So we went to Family Video, and we were looking for it, and we couldn't find it. And then we see two copies of Birth of a Nation.
Oh, yeah, which we are definitely going to have to talk about. But The Birth of a Nation, it's brought up in this film. It's a really, really important film, and I am going to be doing a solo episode, or Jane might be here and just reacting to it, but it's mainly going to be me talking.
Yeah, yeah.
I wrote an essay when I was taking my film classes on the history of Western horror and black people,
mm-hmm.
and how black people have been portrayed in Western horror films. Not just black people, but I mainly covered black people. I did talk a bit about Native Americans,
uh-huh.
But mostly black people are the ones who have gotten the shaft here.
The short end of the stick.
And so I wrote a research paper about it, and I'm going to adapt that paper to be like a narrative essay,
uh-huh.
and we're going to essentially read it here in like podcast form.
Yeah.
So it will probably be released to our patrons first, mm-hmm. on Patreon, but then we probably will release it here after as like a bonus episode, or maybe a week where we can't get together, mm-hmm. we'll release it. But it will be going to Patreon first, so if that's something you're interested in, you can hop over there, and we cover all kinds of movies over there. We're going to be continuing with the black director, black stories on that feed, so that's not going to, we're not going to be doing our normal feed over there either.
Yeah, we're going to do Selma next. Yeah.
So, yeah, but we did find one of Spike Lee's, I believe it is his newest film.
Yeah.
Black Klansman.
It's his only Oscar winner.
Yes, which is...
Upsetting
to us. We love Spike Lee, and I find it very upsetting. Just talking about Spike Lee for a minute. I find it very upsetting that Spike Lee has never won an Oscar for directing at all.
Isn't that so upsetting? He won for Best Adapted Screenplay for this movie.
And the reason is because I think Spike Lee has consistently been on the cutting edge of cinematography and of directing. I mean, okay, Do the Right Thing, if you guys haven't seen it, a lot of you probably haven't. It is about the LA race riots. It was very, very good. But that movie, to us, would almost seem, like, outdated now because it uses specifically the Dutch camera angle, which, if you don't know what that is, it's a camera angle where, like, it's usually really low or really high, and the angle is incredibly steep.
Yeah.
So, it's usually used to, like, make things look a lot bigger than they are, uh-huh. but it's generally at, like, a vertical. So, it's very obvious that the camera is angled. It's not like, oh, that person's so big. It's like, the camera's really angled. But that, although now is kind of an outdated technique and people don't really use it very much, mm-hmm. back then, it was, like, never used. And he sort of, like, pushed it into the forefront of cinematography. And he's done so many... Like, his movies are generally very on the cutting edge.
Yeah.
This movie, in my opinion, is not the most cutting edge of films.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's not, like, an unusual film that we would see nowadays. But it certainly is a bit more, like, I guess, self-aware, more meta.
Yeah.
It certainly has some very self-aware content at the end, which mm-hmm. is, I think, only... It's something that has existed for a long time, but it's definitely starting to become more popular in, like, indie films.
Yeah.
That's, like, a huge thing. I mean, like, people love that, like, quirky, self-aware humor now.
Yeah.
Definitely not the most common thing for a film.
Mm-hmm.
But also not incredibly uncommon.
Yeah.
But Spike Lee, generally, his movies have a lot to say, I guess, in their message.
Yeah, for sure.
They're generally very timely, topical messages.
Yeah. This one, definitely. Mm-hmm. Even though it is set in 1974, right?
1978.
But obviously, it does draw a lot of parallels between the policing system in the 70s and the policing system now, because I think that what this movie is really trying to get at is that within the culture of the police, things really haven't changed all that much.
Yeah. Which, this movie, for all that it is like, it's not really about people being racist towards the main character.
Yeah.
That is, of course, a factor, and it's a factor you have to consider
in. Of course he experiences.
He's a black cop.
Yeah, the first in the 70s.
In his regimen. But he, or on his squad, I guess not his regimen. That's an army thing. But it's definitely one of those, like, it's more about how the KKK has, like, persisted and how the police continue to do the things that they do mm-hmm. and how this blue wall of silence, right, has kind of persisted through time.
Yeah.
Without really honestly seeing that much difference. Like, he was the first black cop and that was happening, and now there's hundreds of black cops and it's still happening.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Black Klansman is a 2018 American biographical black comedy crime film directed by Spike Lee and written by Charlie Waxel, David Rabinowitz, Kevin Wilmot, and Spike Lee. It is based on a 2014 memoir called Black Klansman by Ron Stallworth.
Who is played by John David Washington.
Yes, which is
Denzel Washington's son.
I was like, Daniel Day-Lewis's son. No.
And fun fact, the real Ron Stallworth wanted Denzel to play him in a movie that would ever be made about him. But next best thing.
It also has Adam Driver, Laura Harrier, and Topher Grace.
They're all very good.
Yes. So, let me find the plot. Here it is. The film starts with footage from Gone with the Wind, 1939, of wounded Confederate soldiers lying in the streets in Atlanta, Georgia, which transitions to a black and white PSA. You know, I've never seen Gone with the Wind, but I just kind of have no interest because the more I learn about it, the more I'm like, is this film really racist?
It seems like it.
I haven't seen it. For one, it's just like 4 hours.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either.
I hate watching movies like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I know a lot of people who are like, oh, that's one of my favorite films ever. And I think it's mainly a love story.
Yeah.
But if I'm correct, the people that we're following are Confederate soldiers.
Yeah, the heroes are Confederate soldiers.
So, yeah, that's what I thought.
See, I'm not really that comfortable with that.
See, I just don't really care. First of all, 4 hours. Second of all,
Do you guys want to watch a movie about a Nazi?
Falling
in love for 4 hours?
I don't want to watch any movie about a Nazi.
That was a subplot in Inglourious Basterds of a Nazi falling in love with someone, and I just hated him.
Yeah, it's like, I don't like you, she's Jewish.
Yeah.
It's like, it's been done by Quentin Tarantino and it was done better.
So true.
And we can all agree that it was done better. I mean, it's his best.
It's his best.
It's his best. We all can agree. I mean, at least we can here on this end.
Definitely.
We're all that talks. So. Okay. Transitions to a black and white PSA where a man named Dr. Kennenbrew Beauregard,
played by Alec Baldwin,
comically fumbles a hate-filled screed decrying minorities. The film then jumps into the central plot. In 1972, Ron Stallworth is hired as the first black officer in the Colorado Springs Police Department. Assigned to work in the records room, he faces racial discrimination from his co-workers. After he requests a transfer to undercover work, he is assigned to infiltrate a local rally where national civil rights leader Conway Ture, a.k.a. Stokely Carmichael, gives a speech. At the rally, Stallworth meets Patience Dumas, president of the Black Student Union.
I think it's Patrice.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. Patience. Yeah, Patrice Dumas, president of the Black Student Union at Colorado College. While she takes Ture to his hotel, Patrice is stopped by patrolman Andy Landers, a racist officer in Stallworth's precinct who threatens Ture and gropes Patrice.
Upsetting.
Upsetting. After the rally, Stallworth is reassigned to the Intelligence Division. After reading about a local division of the Ku Klux Klan in the newspaper, he calls, posing as white, and speaks with Walter Breachway, the president of the Colorado Springs, Colorado chapter. But soon realizes that not only did he use his real name, but he also has to go and meet the Klan members.
Well, you probably shouldn't go to that meeting.
Thanks, Sarge. So Stallworth recruits his Jewish coworker, Flip Zimmerman, to act as him to meet the Klan members while he continues to pose as white over the phone. Under the identity of Stallworth, Zimmerman meets with Walter, the slightly more reckless Felix Kendrickson, and later his wife Connie, and Ivanhoe, who cryptically refers to an upcoming attack. Calling Klan headquarters in Louisiana to expedite his membership, Stallworth begins regular phone conversations with Grand Wizard David Duke.
Played by Topher Grace!
Kendrickson suspects Zimmerman of being Jewish and tries to make him take a polygraph test at gunpoint.
Oh, it's so intense.
Yes.
That's such an intense scene.
But Stallworth breaks the Kendrickson's kitchen window to distract them. Stallworth begins dating Patrice, but does not tell her that he is a police officer. After passing information to the Army CID about active duty members, he learns from an FBI agent that two members are personnel stationed at NORAD, which is the, like, National
Aerospace
Organization. It's like a defense, it's a national defense organization for, like, satellites.
KKK members should not be in them.
The point is. Duke visits Colorado Springs for Stallworth's introduction into the Klan. Over the real Stallworth's protest, he is assigned to a protection detail for Duke. Once Zimmerman is initiated, masquerading as Stallworth, Connie leaves the ceremony to place a bomb at a local civil rights rally. The real Stallworth realizes her intention and alerts local police officers. When Connie notices a heavy police presence at the rally, she puts Felix's backup plan into action and plants the bomb at Patrice's house, leaving it under her car when it will not fit into the mailbox. Stallworth tackles her as she tries to flee, but uniformed police officers detain and beat him, despite his protest that he is working undercover. The bomb maker, Walker, recognizes Zimmerman from a prior arrest and informs Felix. He, Felix, and Ivanhoe arrive and trigger the bomb while Ron is being detained. Not realizing where Connie hid it, they detonate it while next to Patrice's car, with the force of the blast overturning their car and killing everyone in the vehicle. Zimmerman arrives and frees Stallworth, and Connie is arrested. While celebrating the closed case that night with Patrice, Landers arrives and harasses the two, drunkenly and remorselessly, admitting to his assault on Patrice. Stallworth then reveals he is wearing a wire before the police chief arrives and arrests Landers for police brutality.
So satisfying.
Police Chief Bridges congratulates the team for their success, but orders them to end their investigation and destroy the records. Stallworth receives a call from Duke, and he reveals to Duke that he is black before hanging up. While Patrice and Stallworth discuss their future, they are interrupted by a knock on the door. Through the window in the hallway, they see a flaming cross on the hillside surrounded by Klan members. The film ends with footage from the 2017 Far Right Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, the car ramming attack by James Alex Fields, which killed Heather Hayes, President Trump's comments, and David Duke's statement afterwards, followed by a shot of an upside-down American flag fading into black and white.
Great ending.
Great ending. So, I guess let's talk about the actual film before we talk about the real life of it.
Okay.
So, this film is so good.
It's so good. It's so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, funny and mm-hmm. tense and makes you feel so many things.
Yeah, there are some really, really great scenes in this film. One of my favorites is the scene where he is on top of Connie.
Mm-hmm. Trying to arrest her.
Trying to arrest her, and the cops show up and they start to arrest him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he says, oh, you know, I'm a cop. And they say, okay, well, where's your badge? And he says, well, it's in my pocket. Can I get it? And they say, yes, get it. And then as soon as he starts to move, they start, you know, beating him up.
They're like, what are you doing?
Yeah, and they take him to the ground. And it's really only after Zimmerman.
Yeah, Adam Driver's
character shows up. And he's like, he's a cop, you fucking idiots. Get off. And they do. And, you know, they're able to arrest Connie. But it's a really scary moment in the movie where you're like, is he going to die?
Yeah, these
and
cops going to kill
gonna
him.
And he's
going
to get away with it? Like, yeah. Because, you know, Connie's screaming like, oh, he tried to rape me. Which is also something that, you know, white women have used for a long time.
I mean, that's, my history teacher told me that that was, like, one of the things that started the Tulsa race riot was a white lady saying
that a guy raped her.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, literally, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah.
Anyone, that's literally the plot of To Kill a Mockingbird, is that a black man is falsely accused of raping a white woman, and that he's arrested for it, and mm-hmm. then he dies. Like, and that, I mean, there was a, like, one of the young, I believe the youngest execution of any person ever.
He was, like, 13.
Was a 13-year-old who was convicted of trying to rape a white woman, or of raping a white woman, or of a white child, maybe, like, a white girl.
I think it was a woman.
Yeah, of trying to rape, like, a white woman, and he was tried as an adult, and
executed, electrocuted.
And then years later, it came out that that was a total lie. Like,
yeah, that never happened.
I mean, there have been so many cases, not even too far ago, but really recently, where old women, these really old women, have come out and said, like, that there was a guy, a black man, that they accused of raping them, and mm-hmm. that then their family went and killed him, and they totally got away with it, because it was like, the cops were like, well, he raped her. And it's like, all of that was a lie for whatever reason, because they were racist, because they were mad at the guy, you know? It's like, that really could very well be a death sentence for a black man.
Yes.
Truly could be a death sentence. And it's amazing, because the same accusation for a white man leads to almost nothing.
Literally, Brock Turner was caught red-handed raping an unconscious girl behind a dumpster.
By two white men, by the way.
By two white men, and
to save that girl.
Yeah. And basically got away with it.
Because he was, you know, a good kid.
Yeah.
And has multiple times expressed that he has no remorse for that woman.
Mm-hmm.
And that he wishes he had at least finished the job, almost.
Yeah.
He has said multiple times that, you know, he wishes he had at least gotten to finish.
Mm-hmm.
Basically. Like, disgusting.
So upsetting.
And so you really think, like, oh my god, is he gonna die?
Yeah. It's a really intense scene.
Yeah. It is intense. And then also, I just think his entire character, Stallworth's entire character, is very interesting, because, like, Patrice, for example, the leader of the Black Student Union, she's really against the cops, because the cops are built on this, like, racist system.
Yeah, the police system, as we know it, was based on this force capturing runaway slaves.
Yeah, and returning them.
And that is what our modern police system is based on.
Yeah.
So it is literally ingrained in the culture.
Yeah, and she even says, like, he says, well, don't you think someone could fight it from the inside? And she says, how are you going to fight it from the inside when it's all broken? Like, being inside, you may stop, like, a couple things, but
mm-hmm.
And I think that's a big point of the movie, too, which is him doing what he did stopped a few cross burnings. It stopped, in the movie, it saved Patrice's life. It saved the life of several protesters. But at the end of the day, the very last shot of the actual movie before the footage
is a cross burning
of the local KKK members. It's like, you,
it still persists.
What you did didn't do anything. It may have, like, temporarily fixed an issue, but at the end of the day, it's still a broken, this is a broken force. And yeah, you got Landers fired, you got one racist cop fired, mm-hmm. but what about all those other racist cops who were horrible to you in the records room? What happened to them?
Yeah.
Nothing. And there's another scene, you know, where after he learns of Patrice's assault from Landers, mm-hmm. and he tells Flip,
yeah.
And his other friend who yeah. works with him, and they're talking about it, and he says, how did you hear what happened? And Flip's like, yeah, that guy, he's been a bad cop for a long time.
Yeah.
And he says, well, then why don't we do something about it? Why don't we tell somebody?
And he's like, well, we're family.
Yeah, and then the other guy says, well, you know, right or wrong, family sticks together. And it's that idea that, like, blue wall of silence yeah. is so much stronger than, like, they can know that, oh, what they're doing is wrong.
But they will not break that imaginary bond.
Bond, exactly. I mean, because to them it's like, well, if I don't have his back, who's gonna trust me enough to have my back?
Yeah.
And it's, for one, it's messed up that people think that way.
Mm-hmm.
That it's like the idea that if I get someone in trouble, that I'm going to lose my life, maybe, because no one will want to help me.
Uh-huh.
But it's also very real. I mean, it's a very real concern that is still, to this day, a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for every bad cop you have 100 good cops,
good cops, in quotes.
In quotes, who don't tell on them. And it's like,
how can you be good if you don't tell on them?
And that's, yeah, exactly.
Like, it's how we view, like, priests that don't molest kids but know that kids are being molested.
Exactly, exactly. This is a very, honestly, the Catholic Church, I think, is a very apt comparison.
I think so, too. It's like, it's that conspiracy of silence.
It is.
They are pressured, like, to stay silent and just, like, obey.
And then anytime they are turned in, what happens? They just try and hide it up because they don't want a conspiracy.
And that's what happens in the police department. Disaster.
Exactly.
71 counts of shitting in the ice cream machine.
Exactly. It would be like if I knew you shat in the ice cream machine 71 times and I didn't tell anyone for 70 of those times. Because I was like, well, I don't want her to get in trouble. And it's like, well, she's shitting in the ice cream machine, so maybe she should get in trouble. Like, there is...
That's a health code violation.
I understand snitches get stitches, but also I understand shitting in the ice cream machine is morally wrong. Like, I'm never going to tell on someone for doing something that only affects them. But yeah. I would definitely tell on someone if it was doing something that affected other people.
Definitely.
I mean, that's what they say is, like, maybe don't concern yourself with other people's shit, but if someone's a threat to their own life or somebody else's life,
mm-hmm.
tell on them.
Yeah.
Tell on them. It's not wrong.
But, you know, again, it's just ingrained in that culture, and I'm sure it's just passed down from precinct to precinct.
Yeah, it is. I mean, oh, I'll tell the story. I mean, what, only 200 people are listening?
Oh, I love this story.
Okay. So I have a family member, I'll say family member, who was a cop. Not around where we live, but in a larger city, okay? Mm-hmm. Was a cop. For a long time. And this, my family member, is, for all accounts, like, a pretty nice person. I mean, he can be kind of a dick, but also, like, who can't?
Mm-hmm.
He's okay. Got kids, got a family, like, well off. And he was a police officer, and he was dishonorably discharged, basically, like, fired, for basically beating the shit out of a guy who was handcuffed. And the only reason he was told on was because he had a brand new, like, rookie partner was assigned to work with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he lives in a heavily Mormon area. So, basically, the Mormon police officer felt really bad.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
he was like, this is wrong.
We shouldn't be doing this.
And he was brand new, so he doesn't know this, like, weird code of silence yet. So he told on him to the police chief, who also happened to be a Mormon, and they went to the same church. And that's the only reason he was fired.
Wow.
Because basically it was like, who do I care about more, like my Mormon family or my police family? And in yeah. this case, the Mormon family won out. But some of the stories he's told us about when he was a cop, which is like, people just become bad when they're cops.
It's the power.
It's the power. And bad people flock to being cops, too.
Yes. Like, and power-hungry dicks.
Yes. And he, like, was talking... They used to do this thing where... And this was, like, a beyond jurisdiction thing, too, that they would do. Where they would pick up this, like, one particular homeless man. And they would pick him up. They'd arrest him for nothing. But he's homeless, so what is he gonna do?
Yeah.
Nothing. Then they drive him over the county line, where it wasn't their jurisdiction anymore, drop him off. By the way, leaving, making him leave all his stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how much stuff does this man have? Probably, like, next to nothing.
They but what take he does him, have, he makes, he, they make them leave.
They make him leave his stuff, like his camp, all his things that he has. They'll drive him over the county line, drop him off, and then they basically would just wait, and then the county police officers in the next county would be like, oh, and then they'd pick him up and drive him back. And it was like a game, and they would see how many times they could drive this guy before their shift ended, and how many, like, where he would end up, like, that would be the loser, right? Like, whichever county was left with him at the end of the day was, like, the losing county.
That's horrible.
I know, a literal person. And, you know, and they would, and this was just, like, a fun game that they played. And something I find so interesting is, so many times in, like, murder trials and kidnappings and all these things, people are like, oh, well, the county jurisdiction really messes up the case.
Yeah.
Because the counties just, they don't communicate properly over county lines. Like,
that's why serial killers couldn't be tracked for hundreds of years.
The jurisdictions, it's just so hard to, like, talk through jurisdictions. And not, it's like, so you couldn't do that, but you could.
Again, play this game with this literal human being.
But you could, you know, you guys were communicative enough to know when the homeless guy was in your area. It's messed up. And it's like,
that's it's the just, power.
It is. And it's like every cop has done stuff like this. And it's like something that and I mean, I'm sure that my family member did not, that first time that he got caught beating the shit out of that guy, I'm sure that wasn't the first time he beat the shit out of a guy.
It's never the first time.
No, it's like but his partner just so happened to be like
this rookie cop.
Rookie cop who's still bright-eyed, like, and
believes in justice.
Exactly. And it's so messed up. It's so messed up.
And this happens all the time, everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is, like, police choose to do their jobs. Police choose to be in their jobs. And police choose not to tell on their coworkers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you worked with someone at somewhere and they were doing a bad job, they were just not working, they're not coming to work, you would tell on them. You would not just cover for them time and time again and just let them do bad things.
Yeah.
But cops don't think that way. Cops, like, have this brotherhood, this, like, pact where it's like, well, if you tell on me, no one's going to want to take care of you.
Yeah, it just, I mean,
it's the same with, like, even the Army.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of, like, women and LGBTQ men and women.
They get sexually assaulted.
Sexually assaulted, murdered.
Yeah.
All of those go missing. Like, all
and they
those,
just cover it up.
And the Army covers it up. I mean, like, we're talking, like, sergeants.
Yeah.
Not just, like, oh, little, like, Army people don't tell on them. Like, sergeants will legitimately be like, oh, they committed suicide. I mean, there's
when they were obviously murdered.
And we didn't do an autopsy and you can't have the body. It's like, well, then why can't I have, if they kill themselves, why can't I have the body? It's like, oh, these you can't, Army property. And then you find out that it's like, okay, yeah, they were definitely murdered, but it's like, within their own people.
Yeah.
They won't break that code. It's just so bizarre. So,
I just don't understand the mentality, I guess.
No. And the thing is, too, another thing about this film, is it draws a lot of comparisons to, like, how really nothing has changed.
Yeah.
So, like, the Ku Klux Klan, literally exactly the same.
Exactly the same ideals.
In the movie, for the most part, the Ku Klux Klan is not really a threat. They are a bunch of bumbling idiots.
They're pretty bumbling,
They don't know what's going on. Like,
they're not very smart.
They're not smart. For the most part, they're very nonviolent. But there's just that one guy. That one guy who's insane. And everyone knows he's insane.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone talks about how insane he is.
Felix, yeah.
Felix, he's insane. He's crazy. Everyone knows that. They even say at one point, the chapter president's like, I'm going to step down, but we can't let Felix win because he's insane.
And even whenever Felix is like, just keeps accusing Flip of being Jewish,
mm-hmm.
at one point the leader, I think Wallace or something, or Walter, is like, now you're just being offensive.
Yes, it's like, most, what they're saying, like, most KKK members, while they're horrible, horrible racists and bad people, they're not, like, gonna kill a black person.
Yeah.
Right? But does that mean, like, they would mourn the death of one?
Does that mean that they wouldn't cover it up if one of their brothers did it?
And here's exactly what happens, too, right? Like, Felix is the one that wants to plant this bomb. Felix is the one that wants to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But Ivanhoe goes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that makes the bomb for him goes along with it. And they're going to, like, and this is a very similar thing where it's like they, sure, maybe not all KKK members are violent. And maybe there is a certain aspect of what they're saying that is protected under freedom of speech.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, just think about the person that drove the car into that crowd of protesters and killed that woman.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like all it takes is one person who hears that rhetoric who is insane
mm-hmm.
to do it. I mean, the shooting.
It fans the fire.
The shooting of the black church, the nine
yeah, black in Charleston.
People in Charleston. I mean, that again is like, is that guy, is that what, would every single white supremacist do that? No. But do white supremacists feel like he should have been punished for what he did?
Not what really. He did is the symptom of what of they are what doing. What
they're doing. Exactly. It's like they're stage one of that.
Yeah.
And he's like stage three, mm-hmm. right? Like he's the end stage and they're the beginning stages. And it's that kind of stuff, like that kind of rhetoric. I mean, it's kind of like, I guess like Antifa almost.
Mm-hmm.
Like Antifa, I mean, Antifa is a little less like the KKK because it's not an organized group. It's yeah. more of like an idea. There are plenty of people who consider themselves to be Antifa who are not violent. They're truly just like, oh, I don't agree with fascism, which is like not a controversial opinion in my opinion. But there, of course, are some people who in the name of Antifa have done some pretty terrible things.
Definitely.
Who have planned mass shootings or have carried out mass shootings, who have killed people. And it's like, that isn't right either. But people, you want to like say, oh, well, nobody can be Antifa because three people have done this. When it's like, on the other end, you have the KKK, which are like basically not going so far as to say we should definitely kill black people, but saying like, if you did, I wouldn't be mad.
And they have this entire history of obviously lynching
black yeah, people. Yeah, that's the thing too. KKK literally is a violent organization at its roots.
That is what they were made to do.
I mean, the same thing with like neo-Nazis. You're like, what?
Like, you can't be non-violent.
You can't be a, yeah. How are you a non-violent neo-Nazi?
That's literally...
A Nazi's violent.
Yeah.
Babe, I don't know what to help you with.
Do you want to talk about the real life events?
Yes. So, this is really cool.
It's a pretty accurate movie.
Pretty accurate.
All of, like, the crazy stuff that happens, pretty much all happened.
So, you have the Vanity Fair article.
Yeah.
Up. Which I think is the most probably comprehensive
mm-hmm.
going through point by point. So do you want to talk about some of those points?
Yeah. So the real Ron Stallworth, he was sworn in as the Colorado Springs police officer on his 21st birthday in 1974. He was the first African-American to graduate from the ranks of the police cadet program. He really wanted to work undercover narcotics. Obviously, that all really happened. He really did attend the speech given by the Black Panther leader, Stokely Carmichael. Let's see. And he really did tell Stallworth, arm yourself and get ready because the revolution is coming.
Yeah. Something interesting is a lot of the conversations that happen in this movie are real. A lot of the conversations he has with David Duke are almost verbatim
mm-hmm.
David Duke conversations. The stuff David Duke says about, you know, like,
I can tell you're white by the way you say R.
That really happened.
Wild.
The idea that it was all, like, sort of this, like, big joke. The Ku Klux Klan is this big joke.
Yeah.
Real.
So the love interest, Patrice, is fictional.
Mm-hmm.
She's entirely fictional. He really did, obviously, establish contact with the KKK. In the real life, they had a P.O. box, not a phone number.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to send a letter, and then he got, like, a phone call 2 weeks later about it.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much, you know, what he said the first time he talked to the chapter president about, you know, hating all these different races, he really said that.
Yeah.
And he, you know, really did all that.
He really did use his real name.
He really did.
Because he didn't think that it would lead to an investigation. Mm-hmm. He thought he was just going to be getting some info on the KKK.
Yep. He had a fellow officer named Chip.
Yes, Chip.
Who's Flip Zimmerman was basically his character.
Not Chip. Chuck.
Chuck. But he was not Jewish in real life.
Right. And also something else they said is in the movie, it's kind of just Flip and Stallworth. And Stallworth does the phone, and then Flip does the in-person. In real life, there were a lot more officers on this, and they would often, while Chuck was the only person that would ever go out and, like, actually meet the KKK, they had other assignments that they were working on, mm-hmm. so it wasn't like he could just go all the time.
Yeah.
And so they would often have multiple times a week phone calls with people from the KKK,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes it wouldn't just be Stallworth. It was often him, but sometimes it would be other cops. Sometimes it would be Chuck, and he said that nobody ever called him.
I know. He said, the people I was dealing with were not, to use an old adage, the brightest bulbs in the socket. Yeah. White supremacists, not all that smart.
That they never figured it out. He said one time somebody was like, why do you sound so different? And he was like, oh, I have a sinus infection. And they were like, yeah.
He said only once in the entire 7 months of the investigation was he asked, what's wrong with your voice?
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, pretty much all of the conversations that he had with David Duke were pretty much verbatim. Mm-hmm. And it actually, like, didn't go as in-depth to their friendship.
Yeah, they apparently had this, like, you know, quote-unquote
friendship. Like, David Duke thought they were friends.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they would have conversations about, like, David Duke's personal life and, like, really crazy stuff.
The whole, if he was ever concerned about some smart aleck N-word calling and pretending to be white, where Duke responded by saying, I can tell that you're white because you don't talk like a black man. He said, you talk very smart, very intellectual white man, and I can tell by the way you pronounce certain words. I said, give me an example. He said, blacks tend to pronounce the word R. He said, they pronounce it Ara. And I said, I could tell by listening to you that you're not black because I know that you do not pronounce the word in that manner.
So weird.
Mm-hmm.
The picture scene where he takes a picture with David Duke, that really happened the exact same way it happened in the movie. Mm-hmm. Even Chuck was taking the picture.
Yes. Sergeant Trapp, real,
mm-hmm.
real guy, who was actually that nice, was actually that, you know,
kind
that
of.
Kind and really supportive of them, yeah.
Yeah. They really did ask them to destroy all the evidence. Mm-hmm. So the entire, like, bombing wasn't real,
mm-hmm.
but obviously, you know, you needed a climax, and, that entire end of the Patrice storyline.
Right. We said that he was assigned to be Duke's protection.
Yep, he really was.
He really was. So really messed up.
Yeah. A lot of it really, most of it really happened.
Yeah. The one big thing that happens in the movie that did not happen was the bombing.
Yeah.
That was not real. They said the most of their search really ever amounted to was they stopped several cross burnings, and then they did find those two workers in the defense department who were fired
mm-hmm.
from their jobs for being a part of the KKK. But that was really, they said, the most that they ever happened, which was, I think, a big reason why it was shut down, is it was...
Just didn't yield those...
It didn't yield a large result.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a lot of time and money.
Yeah, yeah.
It was, so...
You had to invest a lot of time to do it.
Now, why it was...
Destroyed?
Stallworth said in his book that he thinks it was probably because if the public found out that two of their officers were...
Inducted into the KKK,
that people would be really upset.
Yeah.
And even though it was, you know...
Undercover.
Using his real name and stuff. Like, yeah. All that's kind of... Eh. Plus, then the KKK would find out. But this is also a big change. The KKK... So, when the funding was pulled, when the plug was pulled on the project, he did not actually ever call...
David Duke and tell him that
he was black. David Duke did not know until the novel came out.
Yeah.
The biography came out in 2014. David Duke was not aware that the man he had been speaking to was black ever.
Yeah, he had no idea.
He never figured it out. He never was. And this is what I think is so interesting is David Duke talked to like 7 different men, never was able to tell the difference.
I know.
It's like, oh, can you tell a black man from a white man, really?
You can't tell 7 different people.
You can't tell 7 different people apart. It's hilarious. David Duke, while he says that he, you know...
He said he respects Spike Lee.
But that he doesn't agree with the portrayal of himself, basically.
Yeah. Topher Grace was really good.
I also didn't think they made him look that bad.
No, I didn't think so. I don't think so either.
Not any worse than he makes himself look.
So true.
I mean, that's what I find so funny is they're like, oh, the bad press. And I'm like, how much worse press can you have?
I'm like, this is just what you say on TV. What are you talking about?
Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. How much worse can you look?
National director.
Of the organization.
They changed it from Grand Wizard because they were just like.
Yes.
maybe it's a little silly.
Yeah. So dumb.
So dumb.
So dumb.
How would you give this movie?
Oh, I give it a 9 out of 10.
I give it a 10 out of 10.
I really like it. It's really weird.
It's very funny in a really very weird way.
There's some amazing technical shots. The double dolly
shot. The double dolly shot at the end whenever they're looking out at the cross burning. So good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say the biggest changes are in the romance, the bombs, and then in Chuck's character, like Adam Driver.
He just had to be, you know.
At one point, you kind of have to consolidate the amount of people.
Definitely.
And it definitely, I think, makes it better.
Yeah, and Adam Driver looks a lot like the real Chuck.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everyone looks a lot like their counterparts except for
John David Washington.
John David Washington. He's much more handsome.
He's so much more handsome than the real Ron Stallworth.
Yes.
He's really, really good looking.
Mm-hmm. Also, Ron Stallworth and David Duke did meet in person, but the encounter was not part of Stallworth's undercover work. The Black Klansman true story supports what's seen in the movie. Stallworth's chief assigned him to protect David Duke during his visit to Colorado. And then apparently Duke said that that's fine and I appreciate the police department's efforts. Thank you. So it was not like it wasn't a part of a ceremony. It was just like a gathering in Colorado for the KKK that he was attending. And that is where the thing happened. That is where the picture happened.
Uh-huh.
And apparently from like the testimonies, David Duke was actually pretty okay with having a black bodyguard until he touched him.
Yeah.
And then he was not okay, and he did try to get him to destroy the picture,
mm-hmm.
but Ron basically was like, if you touch me, I'll arrest you.
For assaulting a police officer. Yeah. Another really upsetting scene in the movie is whenever they're watching Birth of a Nation and treating it like Rocky Horror.
Oh, it is disgusting.
They're like, it's like, switches from that to this incredibly old black man describing this horrendous... Mm-hmm. Like, murder of a kid.
It is.
It's horrible. And it's just really, really powerful
stuff. Birth of a Nation is the most racist film that may exist.
It's about how the Ku Klux Klan saved America.
Basically. Yeah, it's about the Ku Klux Klan during the Reconstruction period in the South. And it is almost single-handedly responsible for the rebirth of the KKK in the 1920s. It was a beloved movie by President Woodrow Wilson.
His favorite.
He loved it. While President Wilson was not a member of the Ku Klux Klan, he was an avid supporter.
Loved him.
Something I did not learn in school.
Nope.
And he described Birth of a Nation as history being written with lightning. And it is the first feature film that was ever shown at the White House.
Jesus Christ.
So that's a fun piece of history that will be forever. They did, so I want to just talk about some of the things the task force did actually accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
They gathered intelligence on the KKK, thwarted several cross burnings and rallies, gained the trust of KKK leaders, including Grand Wizard David Duke. They also learned of the identities of various KKK members, some of which held positions in the military, two held sensitive positions at NORAD. Several of the Klansmen talked about the bombing of two gay bars that existed in Colorado Springs at the time and stealing automatic weapons from Fort Carson.
Wow.
But no actual terror attacks were ever attempted. So they yielded no arrests, but it was considered as a success because in the city limits, they were able to basically stop all KKK activity for 9 months.
That's awesome. Essentially.
Other than that.
But
basically, the reason it was stopped is that the department pulled funding because of the image it would have if it had gotten out that they were doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically just figured that it's... They basically just figured that the longer it went on, the more likely it was that it was going to come out. You know what? We should definitely talk about some government conspiracies sometimes.
Definitely.
You shouldn't trust the government.
No, you shouldn't. They're out to get you. I promise. Yeah,
honestly, the fact that they stopped because they were like, oh, we might be found out, shocking to me. Maybe not as shocking since it was dealing with a white supremacist organization, but...
Yeah.
Definitely messed up.
Mm-hmm. I love this movie.
Me too. We should probably also talk about the ending, sort of.
Yeah. So Spike Lee really makes the film a lot more timely with his ending. After it, the film ends with the final shot of watching the cross burn. And then it switches to video footage of the riots in Charlottesville
or North Carolina. Yeah, North Carolina.
Charlottesville, I think. Anyway, all the neo-Nazis marching with tiki torches. You remember that.
Right. You remember. And then it shows video of the car ramming into the protests that killed Heather. I don't know her last name. Heather or something. And also Donald Trump's speech that he gave after the Charlottesville
saying that some killings. Of the neo-Nazis are perfectly fine people.
Yeah, and that they just want what's best for this country. And so... Well, the movie gives a lot of, like, nods to the Donald Trump era.
Like, a lot of, you can hear, we watch things with subtitles, so you can often hear, like, the white supremacists in the background talking about making America great again.
Yeah, about how, you know, they're ruining the country and all those sorts of things. So, yeah, that, it's all, and then at the end, he definitely, you know, sealed it with, this is exactly what the message I was going for.
Yep.
But... This brings me to the reviews.
Oh, man.
They're about as bad as you'd expect.
I'm not ready.
They're about as bad as you'd expect.
Guys, honestly, I don't know how many more racist reviews I can handle.
Well, until people stop being racist.
No!
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm so upset already.
Oh, yeah. A lot of them were just like, this film doesn't, like, we don't need politics in film, you know, whatever.
What?
We're saying, like,
yeah. Oh, yeah, because politics were never in film.
Never. The Birth of a Nation is not at all a political film.
Not at all political.
They're like, I love The Birth of a Nation, but I hate this. Politics does not.
This racist film.
Yeah. So, also just all, you know, stuff like that. Spike Lee, also, people love hating on Spike Lee because all his movies are pretty much about race. Not all of them, but most of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is a 2 out of 10.
Ugh.
Profoundly racist film by Spike Lee. Spike Lee has, from his earliest film, depicted whites as dumb, expletive, manipulative, redneck, and uncivilized, among other negative traits. I mean, there were multiple good white people in this film.
Yeah. Yeah, the sergeant.
The sergeant. Flip. His friend.
Yeah.
Pretty much every single person in his department. The police chief.
All pretty cool.
There's only... Even the KKK members aren't depicted that poorly.
Yeah.
I would say they're depicted accurately.
Yeah.
Which makes them look poor.
Bumbling.
In contrast, he portrays the black person as the victim, the enslaved soul of goodness trampled underfoot and demeaned by whites.
What?
The only good soul among the latter come from the Jewish, a minority biblically known to include various races, including the Falasha, a black tribe hailing from Ethiopia. In other words, Spike Lee's standpoint, the only good whites are those who are not completely white. I am a white person born in Africa and am proud to have had and continue to have blacks, Chinese, Asian Indians, and mulattoes among my friends.
Okay.
While I find that political correctness a destroyer of art and welcome the fact that Spike Lee does not hesitate to blast it, so he says, I find political correctness a destroyer of art, and I love that Spike Lee blasts it. Okay. I find Black Klansman a profoundly racist film. The highly intelligent black rookie quickly outsmarts all the daft whites in the police force, launching an investigation into KKK with the very help of the white establishment Lee so attacks.
Okay, that doesn't happen, though.
I know. I was like, first of all, who does he outsmart? He asks to be reassigned and after working for a while is allowed to be.
Yeah.
Also, a lot of people complained about the fact that, like, why would they have had a black man on this job when that was going to cause so many complications? And just like in the movie, it's not like a planned investigation. It just sort of happens.
Yeah.
And at that point, it's like too late. He's like already involved.
Yeah.
Plus,
it just happens.
Plus, he's like the only one that really cares about it. You know what I mean? He's the only one that really wants to spend the time doing it. But also, I love that he says he attacks the white establishment, which I was like, when? He actually gets in trouble with his girlfriend for not attacking the white establishment.
Yeah, that's like one of his character flaws to her.
Yeah, literally.
That's why she breaks up with him.
Yes.
Because he's not critical enough of the police.
Lee directed the excellent 25th Hour in 2002. In it, he showed talent that was sadly withheld from the public sense, which is a pity because he could have been a director of the highest cut. I love this. He could have been a director of the highest cut after his film in 2002. Not like he's been making films for decades.
Jesus Christ.
Like, award-winning, super good films for decades. Yeah, the 25th Hour, that's really what distinguished his career. Instead, he has elected to go on racist tirades of dubious moral authority. Direction is heavy-handed and biased. Acting is pedestrian. Script is uneven. And you have to suspend your disbelief to unbelievable lengths to believe the action. Especially when the white woman is trying to plant a bomb in Laura Harrier's post box. Why is that? Why do you have to suspend your disbelief to unimaginable actions?
People bomb places all the time!
It literally totally happens.
What? Also, most of this movie really happened.
No, most of this movie is not fake. And cinematography is mediocre, to put it mildly.
That's just not true.
No, the cinematography is excellent. Best avoided, unless you are a diehard Spike Lee fan. 2 out of 10. 1 star for the exquisitely beautiful Laura Harrier, and the other for the superb recreation of Afro hairstyles of the 1970s.
Ugh.
I know.
Makes me feel dirty.
Gross. Ew. I was like, you gave it a point because they did a good job on the hairstyling.
I hate it.
I know. Really, yeah. Most people were like, I was with you until you started criticizing Donald Trump, and I was like, so you just didn't watch the movie? Because the stuff at the end was coming from the beginning.
Yeah, we all knew it was coming. Literally. The parallels were there.
Very.
Are you just not smart enough?
I mean,
the people I was dealing with were not the smartest lights in
The real Ron Stallworth literally said that when he watched the movie, something he noticed was that they made the KKK members way smarter than they were in the book. And when I watched the movie, I thought the KKK members were all idiots.
Yes.
So the fact that they were smarter than they were in real life kind of is like, ooh, that's disturbing. But also not really shocking, is it?
No.
I mean,
it's almost like education combats ignorance.
Almost like it.
Mm-hmm.
Hey. We want you to have that GED.
Only
GED. The GED, baby. 6 months of training is more than enough to get you ready for life-threatening situations with people you may normally not encounter. I think that's perfectly enough time to completely override your entire upbringing.
I have to go to school for 6 years to talk to people for a living. You go to school for 6 months to hold a gun for a living.
Literally. Literally. Ha! 40% of police are domestic abusers.
Ooh.
Ooh, that's a good statistic.
Reported!
I want you to know that I looked up that statistic. I, like, vetted it. I'll give you guys the vetting. It's not 100%. Okay, it's not inaccurate, but it's not, like, 100% accurate either. So, 2 studies have been done, both of which found that 41% of all police officers have, in the states that they studied, but each one only studied 1 state.
Okay.
Okay? I don't know which states. I didn't look that far ahead of it. So it could be, like, really poor states or something. You know what I mean? But 41% of officers in both of those states self-reported abuse. That was only self-reported abuse.
Oh, my God.
That's not abuse. That did not include abuse that, like, had not been reported. It was not a survey of, like, people who have been married to cops. Mm-hmm. It was of the cops. 41% reported on themselves that they had committed an act of domestic abuse against their child or spouse. Okay? So then, There was another study done in, I believe it was 2002, mm-hmm. which found that, they studied several states and found that 28% of all cops were domestic abusers. I don't know how they found this, if they did, like, more maybe, like, not so much asking the cop study.
Yeah, yeah. Victim reporting.
But that's still an incredibly high number compared to anything else in the world.
That's like a pathology. Listen,
that's like,
okay.
That's a third, that's almost an entire third of all police officers in any state abuse their families.
Okay. Keep, just to get some perspective. So, it's estimated that about 6% of Catholic priests are molesters, are child molesters.
Which people already say is like, wow, that's a huge amount.
That is a pathology.
So, at least almost 30% of all cops, of which there are way more than priests, because being a priest is way harder than being a cop, by the way.
Yeah.
Way more school.
Way more school.
Way more vetting. All of it. And so, wow. And then a fourth study done in, like, 2009 found a high correlation between the tendency, between police officers and the tendency to abuse domestically, to be a domestic abuser. So they found a high, significant correlation.
Listen, it's the power the police force draws in violent people.
People, yeah. I mean, it's a lot. I mean, it's so many factors that it's like, how do you fix it? So many factors.
It's the entire system is broken.
Because it's not just like, oh, once their police power, it's not like, oh, Stanford Prison Experiment, power corrupts.
Yeah.
That is a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a part of it that people who are bad know they can get this job.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they're not like, oh, I'm a bad guy and I want to be a bad guy with a gun. But to them, it's like this weird self righteous mercenary thing.
It's like, I know I can get away with this if I do this job.
Exactly. Or not only that, but they probably think they're giving some weird justice. I mean,
yeah.
Like, George Floyd was accused of counterfeiting a $20 bill.
Yeah.
Accused.
Accused.
Not even proven that he did that. And even if he did...
What? Bank fraud?
That's not a... Plenty of people commit fraud... And
all the time!
And don't go to prison ever.
White collar is, like, the most under... convicted crime.
Yeah, because duh.
Duh.
But, like, that's not a death sentence. But for that cop, he was probably like, well, I'm just doing the right thing. I'm just holding the perp. And it's like, if you think that that's true, you are messed up in the head.
It's disgusting.
And it's like, I don't think every cop goes to work and is like, I hope I can kill a black person today. But I do think that they go to work and they're undertrained. They have... I mean, you don't know what their backgrounds are. They could be coming. I mean, here's the thing. If you're picking a job like being a police officer, like, no offense, like, to police officers, but the job is, it pays shit, the hours are shit, the work is shit, and you need no education. We're not exactly attracting America's best and brightest to these things.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you were America's best and brightest, you're not wanting to do that. And I'll tell you, like, we know some people who were in the honors program with us who are getting criminal justice degrees. And do they want to be cops?
No.
No. They want to be the people in charge of cops.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, and those people, the ones that I've met for on the most part, are pretty decent people.
Very socially aware.
Very aware that their system has flaws. But also, at the end of the day, are those the people that are out there dealing with those situations? Are they the first responders?
No.
No. And that's, and the very idea that, like, the cops have this much power, and that people can just say, well, they were scared. And it's like, well, too bad. That's the job.
Listen,
like,
I'm
that
just...
you signed up for was to be put in these situations that are going to be scary and are going to be hard. And if you if you're freaking out more than citizens, that's a problem. And I don't understand the idea. There's like this weird, like, double consciousness here that people have, which is, well, police officers are allowed to be scared and freak out, but civilians need to be completely calm, totally follow what the police officer says.
Be completely passive.
And just completely do what the police officer says, no matter how scary it is, because, well, then...
Even though they're pointing a gun at you.
Yeah, and then it's like, well, no, like, why are cops allowed to freak out, but citizens aren't? And then also, the idea that if you don't do what a cop says, that you deserve to die...
What is that? No one should have that amount of power.
No one. And also, here's the other thing, too. You know, a lot of people say, like, well, that's why, you know, black people, they need to arm themselves and they need to know their rights. And you're like, how many times have we seen, like, I'm sure I can pull up a couple cases where Black people do know their rights, mm-hmm. and they do, or and they do arm themselves. And like, there was one, maybe 1 year ago, I wish I remembered his name. Like, at this point, it's like so many black people die every day. Who know? I don't know their names. It's sad.
Yeah.
But it's, he was concealed carrying legally with a permit, mm-hmm. had it in his glove box, and was pulled over for whatever reason he was pulled over for. And the cop asked him if he was armed, and he said, yes, I have a gun in my glove box, but my license and registration is over in there, and I need to go get it.
Mm-hmm.
And the cop told him to go get it, and he went to go reach for it, and the cop shot him. What? It's like, I told you that I was legally armed, I have my permit, you knew where the gun was, and still, and then also, here's the other thing, too. A cop, imagine this, a cop tries to pull you over, and they ask if they can search your car. You legally do not have to let them search your car.
You can say no. I would say no.
You're totally allowed to say no. In fact, that's unreasonable search and seizure.
You should say no.
It's against your constitutional rights. You're absolutely allowed to say no. But imagine this. Then the cop's like, well, I'm searching your car. Get out of the car. And you're like, no, for what for? Like, for what? And then they can just say, oh, well, I smell drugs. And who, and in the end of the day, whose word is going to be taken? Yours or the cops?
Right.
Cops violate people's rights all the time.
Because they can.
Not just black people either. Poor people.
Yeah.
White people, like, specifically poor
it's,
people.
It's minorities and poor people.
Specifically. Because you are easy to take advantage of, because you do have the right to say no to that kind of thing. You do have rights. But at the end of the day, if you go to court, who's going to believe who? You can't hire a lawyer good enough. You can't, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, judges are a part of the system too. Judges take the words of cops
Exactly. Judges take the cop's side.
Always. And it is, I mean, it's hard because it's true that there are probably way more lawful arrests than there are unlawful arrests. But there are enough unlawful arrests that it's a problem.
You should be upset about it.
Even in, you know, where we live, I never really knew about police brutality here. And obviously, I'm a pretty well-off white woman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't look sketchy. My car is not that sketchy. I don't live in a horrible neighborhood. But I was reading, and this was a post from a white person. Poor. But talking about how a cop pulled them over, her and her boyfriend over, asked to see her social security card, and she said no, because she was like, there's no reason you need my social security card.
Mm-hmm.
And then he basically said, well, then get out of the car. And she said, no, you have no right to ask me to get out of the car. And then the cop started threatening to arrest her boyfriend, and she started freaking out and screaming.
Mm-hmm.
So he called for backup, and the backup came, and they arrested her, and she posted pictures of her body, and she was bruised all over.
Oh,
her thumb had been dislocated whenever they were putting the handcuffs on. And she was arrested. Well, I don't really know, because she said that, here's the thing. If you're being arrested, they have to read you like your Miranda rights.
Yeah.
She was not read her Miranda rights, but she was held for 24 hours and wasn't allowed to leave against her will.
That's illegal.
Exactly. Which is like, if you're not arresting me, you're not allowed to hold me in a jail.
If you're not arresting me and you don't read me my rights, I can leave whenever I want.
Exactly. That's the thing is, if they're not arresting you, they can't hold you there. And if they are arresting you, you have a right to be read your Miranda rights. And if they don't, they can't hold anything against you and they have to let you go. So she just said she was in solitary basically for like 24 out, like, for all night, and she apparently was medicated. She took medication, and her boyfriend dropped off that medication, but they refused to give it to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's very illegal.
Yes, very. All of that's very illegal.
But also, it's like,
there's just no scrutiny for police officers.
Exactly, and it's like, well, if that, I said something along the lines of, like, that woman should take that to court if she can afford to, but she probably can't.
Yeah.
She probably can't afford to take it to court. And even if she does, where's the proof? We don't have body cameras on our police officers. So where's the proof? There is none. I mean, that's why people have dash cams.
Yeah.
Literally.
It's disgusting.
I know. It's messed up. It's a messed up system. And it's like, how do you fix
a system that's inherently
broken? How do you
broken?
Fix a system that's inherently broken? I don't know if there is a way to do that. I mean, I don't know if there is a way to... I mean, there are steps you can take. We could require more education. We could be much more harsh on when police officers do that kind of... do murder someone or do illegally arrest people or violate their rights, but it's difficult because you have to fix not only the justice system, but the law system.
Yeah.
Like, the law system has to be completely fixed, too, where you can't just be like, oh, well, it's a cop, so I'll take his word.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
Who knows? All right, guys.
Smarter than me, hopefully. Well...
thank you for listening.
Thanks.
If you have any favorite movies written or directed by Black people, please let us know.
Yes, we'd love to do them.
We'd love to do them. I'm going to sign off with Black Lives Matter.
They do.
And that is the Flick Chicks official statement.
Yeah. Listen, here's the thing. If you don't like this, this is not the podcast for you.
Not the podcast for you.
I don't care. I don't need to hear about how you don't like it. Just stop listening. I don't care.
We don't want you listening.
I don't want you to listen. If this is of if the idea that people shouldn't be killed for their skin color is controversial to you, you can gladly take your exit. I will not stop you.
Mm-hmm.
So again, if we said anything wrong or you
want to talk about anything,
hit us up. We do have social media that we monitor. The links will be, not the links, but the handles will be in the show notes.
Yep.
As well as links to our Patreon, where we are going to be continuing this theme.
Yes. All right, guys.
All right, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.